Good evening. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio. You can find us at blogtalkradio.com starting every Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Mamma Mia, no Sharia. Wednesdays, it's me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports, 6 p.m. Eastern. Normally, sometimes I must confess, I have to change things around. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And folks, that's why I know it's, I make jokes that you don't have to watch Pac-12 football or whatever. If you've ever listened to that show, both shows really, Vito as well, but if you've never listened to Minister Usama Dakduk, the man is brilliant, forthright, no-nonsense, not histrionic. He doesn't go in for stuff like I do with the rants or the comedy or whatever, just straightforward, but brilliant. And I got to confess, some over my head. Doesn't mean that I don't learn. It doesn't mean I don't then seek out. But yes, definitely a cut above the average commentator, analyst, host, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, give it a listen. Give Vito and Al a listen, of course. Vito, I don't know, but he might have followed my lead with the concept of the quality rant. Yes, I think he'd ranted before, but I think when he heard some of my rants, I'm not bragging here. I just think he might have said, you know what, if Hank has no problem doing it, what the hell, why not? But yeah, the quality rant portion of when Vito's on is right up there with any quality rant that it can be heard. Ways you can listen to us, of course, just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. And then when you get there, click on the live button. You'll take another screen, go down to the lower right-hand corner and click on chatters. And it'll tell you who's there, what shows are on. And with us, any of our shows, it'll say Global Patriot Radio. Or you can actually get an account. It's free. Account, sign in, and then come into the chat room where other people are hanging out. Now, tonight, nobody's hanging out, but hey, nobody's on the phones either. What if I gave a show and nobody listened? Oh, wait a second. I've done that many times before, I'm sure. But yeah, come on into the chat room, or you can give us a call, 319-527-6706. That's a double bonus. You can listen, of course, but you can also hit the one on your phone, and we get a little hand raise, and we'll pick up your call, and you can voice whatever you want, for the most part. Now, as I've said before, I'm trying to get away from taking anonymous calls, so if you're a first-time caller, you've never called in or anything, please let me know in the chat if you can, so I know you're not going to be somebody who says, by the way, Hank, can you suck your own whatever, or lick your own whatever? Yeah, well, we don't need that. There's several types of losers out there, people that need a life. One of them is those who want to hear themselves swear on internet radio. Yeah, way to go. It's already allowed. I discovered some other losers. Okay, so you know those people that go to Starbucks and just hang out there all day for the free Wi-Fi? I know, it's depressing because, one, it's depressing that you know it, that they're there all day, and you know it because you went there at 8 in the morning for something, and then for some reason you go there after. Definitely don't make that a habit, but it's happened before. There have been days where I've been twice in one day, and the same people you saw at 8 o'clock are still there working the Wi-Fi, the free Wi-Fi, the free plug-in to charge, whatever. Well, today I discovered a dude at Sam's Club. Now, I admit, I go to Sam's Club, I shop there, and I sometimes go to that little pizza kiosk that they have, Pizza Hut. Get there like $2.66, tax included. I get the little double slice of pizza with a soda, So I'm sitting there eating, and this dude is obviously taking advantage of the free Wi-Fi and then tells his buddy. His buddy walks up. He goes, oh, man, free Wi-Fi. What? Literally, you're here for the free Wi-Fi hanging out at Sam's Club? Man, that's depressing. It really is. Hey, other ways you can reach out to me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. That's my email. Head on over to Facebook, Hank Jones Polysports. Just put it in the search engine of Facebook, Hank Jones Polysports, iSports. Go to Twitter, @HPolysports. There's a lot of other shows besides ours, too. Holger occasionally pops up with Audrey Russo. Go to AudreyRusso.com Thursday nights. Joe Gibson every Tuesday night. He does other shows as well, but typically Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. Restoring Our Republic. Annie with Southern Sense Radio, Fridays, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Dave and G-Ski Rocks, the Airwave America. I'm not sure if they're active right now. I haven't seen much from them. Tim Tapp, Tap Into Truth, great show. You know, when you see a show, when you're listening and you hear it, like the show. Click to follow the show. You'll get emails. So, anyway, hanging out, the official Space Force Observation Outpost. My mini Aussie has been fed, jumped shoulder high yet again. The wife is working out in Seattle right now remotely. My son-in-law, who I've talked about, who had the surgery, he came home yesterday from the hospital, which is a victory. Doing okay. Been able to text back and forth with him, which is a good sign. So, yeah, life is getting better. Today's first Internet Laffy comes from the Babylon Bee, and this is a classic. Claudia Gay, if you don't know who she is, she's the president of Harvard, who just faced some criticism and all that. Claudia Gay responds to plagiarism allegations by giving inspiring I Have a Dream speech. Oh, God. Who writes those things? Those are awesome. Next one for the Bee. Yellow penalty flag to be featured on the cover of Madden 25. Yeah, it's not just Iowa games where penalties are kind of crazy. You know, here we're talking about people say, you know, oh, hey, it's not the penalties that killed the Hawkeyes. But you're seeing poor officials throughout. Poor reef play officials. I mean, it's these guys are incompetent. And yet you start to think, are they incompetent or are they really just party line, who knows. Last week's losses that I deem significant. So last Wednesday, we lost actress Ellen Holly at the age of 92. She was noted as the first black actress to be featured in a leading role on daytime. She played the role of Carla Hall on One Life to Live. Some interesting trivia. Though she never married, one of her romantic partners was actor Roger Hill, who happened to pass away in 2014. Roger Hill was best known for his brief but high-lighted role as Cyrus, the gang leader who tried to unite all the New York street gangs in the 1979 cult classic, The Warriors. Can you dig it? Thursday, we lost German-American decorated member of the Ritchie Boys, Guy Stern, at age 101. Guy Stern was a German of Jewish heritage. He was the only member of his family to escape Nazi Germany. So he came to the U.S., he served in Army Intelligence, and the Ritchie Boys was a secret military spy group, primarily Germans and Austrians, who were instrumental as a military intelligence interrogation team in World War II. They conducted frontline interrogations during the war. Friday, we lost actor Ryan O'Neill at the age of 82. No cause was revealed, although he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer back in 2012. Interesting, he began training as a boxer, but then he moved to acting in 1960. And after a run of TV roles, his breakout came in the 1970 flick Love Story alongside Ally McGraw. That movie also featured a young Tommy Lee Jones, as well as veteran actors John Marley and Oscar winner Ray Milland. O'Neill received Oscar and Golden Globe nominations for the role. After some success with What's Up, Doc, which he did with Barbara Streisand in 1972, Ryan O'Neal starred in Paper Moon with his daughter Tatum O'Neal in 1974. He was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Actor in a musical or comedy, while his daughter Tatum became, at that time, the youngest Oscar-winning actor as Best Supporting Actress. He did a love story follow-up titled Oliver's Story, and then he followed that with another film with Barbara Streisand, The Main Event. He never really saw widespread success after that, although he did have a run on TV's Bones, playing the father of the main character. He was married twice, as well as being a longtime partner of Farrah Fawcett until her death in 2009. He had four children, including two with Farrah Fawcett. Really sad news from Tennessee, where former Tennessee Oilers / Titans tight end Frank Wycheck passed away last Saturday from complications of a fall. His most famous play, probably the one where at the end of a playoff game against the Buffalo Bills, Frank Wycheck pretended to bobble the ball on a kickoff return, and then he turned and passed it to a wide open, all alone Kevin Dyson, who then took it to the end zone to win. If you remember, the Bills, I believe, I don't remember if they'd scored a touchdown or kicked a field goal with very little time on the clock. And then it was a brilliant play. Frank Wycheck played it to the hilt and then turned and threw it to Kevin Dyson. And the Buffalo Bills special teams coach was fired after that. He also spent some time in the squared circle in pro wrestling ranks. Later on, he had experienced symptoms of CET in recent years, apparently. He was just 52. Very sad news, definitely. We also lost Anna Cardwell from the show Here Comes Honey Boo Boo to adrenocortical carcinoma, just 29. She was the sister of the titular personality Alana Honey Boo Boo Shannon and the daughter of the notorious Mama June Shannon. Two losses in the music world on Monday as we lost English singer-songwriter Richard Kerr at age 78. Now, he's credited with three mega hits, and I mean mega. Mandy and Looks Like We Made It, which were huge for Barry Manilow, as well as I'll Never Love This Way Again, which hit big for Dionne Warwick. And then we also lost American singer-songwriter-producer Jeffrey Foskett to thyroid cancer at age 67. Now, he was Carl Wilson's falsetto vocals even after Carl Wilson returned to the Beach Boys. He then turned and produced with Brian Wilson when Brian Wilson returned to the music biz in the 1990s. Then a very sad loss on Monday. Actor Andre Brower passed away at age 61 after a brief illness. He won several awards for his work as Detective Frank Pemberton in the show Homicide: Life on the Street, and as the very serious captain on the comedic show Captain Raymond Holt on the comedy Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Now, my personal favorite role for him was the sidekick to Nicolas Cage's character in the film City of Angels. Now, as a side note, he was born July 1st, 1962, just 30 days before actor Wesley Snipes, and true. Yesterday, we lost Japanese super centenarian Fusa Tatsumi at age 116. At the time of her death, she was verified as the second oldest person in the world. Yeah, second oldest. I don't know how they verify that, but whatever. She moved into a nursing home in 2013. She was still able to do gymnastics in her wheelchair. At age 110, she was still doing her own makeup, according to Wick, bedridden and rarely spoke in her later years. Put this all in perspective. Someone from my hometown recently posted on Facebook that the time between the end of World War I, 1917, to 1970 is the same amount of time between 1970 and now. So if any of you live long enough, people will say, he or she lived before Vietnam. By the way, that day we also lost former Greek soccer player and manager Kostas Nestoridis. But he was only 93. Northwest Media to the chat room. So see, folks, come on into the chat. There's chat to be had. I remember, please continue praying for Felicia Goodson at this point, going through some medical stuff. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's nationwide 24-hour call center, messaging and answering service, medical clinic, hospital, service industry, remote work, frontline work. If you don't want to return from COVID to the office, if you're one of those companies that played it smart and said, we don't need to pay rent, give them a call because they can help you. It can be your frontline. If you like to do remote work, give them a call as well. 800-555-3738. Or, of course, on the interwebs at alliancecommunications.com. This one's kind of cold, but it's another internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. Starbucks kiosks now ask if you would like to donate $1 to buy a bullet for Hamas. Okay, our first actual story is lodged firmly in the polysports category from the U.S. Senate. Fight over college football playoff spills into Senate. Pitting Rick Scott from Florida, Senator Rick Scott, against his Republican colleagues from Alabama. He did attend the Florida State Seminoles' last national championship victory in 2013 as governor. He's demanding full transparency on the selection committee's decision to bump Florida State from the national playoffs in favor of Alabama, which lost to Texas earlier in the season. For Scott, the secret deliberations to deny Florida State the chance to win is the latest example of unfair decisions being made by America by unaccountable people behind closed doors. He points out that they did everything they were supposed to do, went 13-0, beat two highly ranked teams in Louisiana State and Louisville. He says, was this a financial decision? If you did the right thing, you should disclose everything. Be upfront about it. Disclose what happened, how they made the decision. He says he's worried that the selection committee may have been influenced by outside financial interests, and he's demanding the panel turn over all the text, email, and written communications among members of the panel and the college football playoff officials. He noted that the Southeastern Conference, which is Alabama's home, signed an exclusive 10-year deal with ESPN to broadcast its games starting in 2024. Here's what we know. There was a financial interest by ESPN to have Alabama in. Was that part of the decision? I don't know. But be transparent. Tell us what happened. He says the committee did not follow the process because Florida State entered the final week of the regular season ranked number 4 in the country and won its last game against the 16th-ranked Louisville in the ACC championship. In a letter to Boo Corrigan, the chairman of the selection committee, who, by the way, is the athletic director at North Carolina State, another ACC school, he pointed out that the decision to pass over Florida State will cost the school and the ACC millions worth of revenue distribution. But he says the consequences for FSU could reverberate for years. Think about it. Now, when Florida State wants to recruit somebody, some kid's going to say, you're never going to get in the football playoffs because I can come and play here and do everything right, and I'm still not going to play in the national championship. He's getting backup from Governor DeSantis, by the way. And on that note, you can add Florida AG Ashley Moody to the mix. She announced she's launching an investigation into the CFP committee herself. She said the state's antitrust division is sending a civil investigative demand for, quote, more information about the nature of possible contracts, conspiracies in restraint of trade or monopolization of trade and commerce relating to anti-competitive effects of the CFP. She said that although she is a lifelong Gator, she knows injustice when she sees it. And she also noted that the NCAA, conferences, and the committee are subject to antitrust laws. And again, last week, Governor Ron DeSantis asked for $1 million to be set aside for Florida State if needed in order to aid Florida State if it wishes to sue the committee. Chair Boo Corrigan said that the injury to quarterback Jordan Travis weighed heavily in the decision. And again, it didn't matter in other years. So as part of her investigation, Ashley Moody wants communications between the SEC, ACC, NCAA, ESPN, Power Five, and Group of Five conferences as it relates to deliberations, compensation of committee members, how each voted, the names of those present during the vote, and information related to the software used to record votes, as well as other info. But I could harp on this for the whole show. I could literally take the whole show. I'm not going to. But what happened is terrible. They literally went against everything that they would have said in any other year. An undefeated power. I mean, Texas vaulted. I mean, think about this. Texas vaulted Florida State only on the basis of the fact that they beat Alabama in game two after Alabama beat number one Georgia in game 13. And remember, they talk about injuries. Well, how good was that victory for Alabama, given that some of Georgia's players weren't at full strength? See, it makes no sense how a team went from 8-4, another went from 7-3, when the number four team didn't lose. It doesn't make sense. They're absolutely right. A court ruling on the New York State concealed carry law, federal appeals court blocked enforcement of portions of that law, basically requiring social media disclosures and restricting carrying on private property that is open to the public and in places of worship. However, it rejected a lower court's decision to block a portion of applicants for a permit demonstrate good moral character. It says, given that most spaces in a community that are not private homes will be composed of private property open to the public to which this law applies, the location functionally creates a universal default presumption against carrying firearms in public places, seriously burdening lawful gun owners' Second Amendment rights. As for the social media disclosure requirement, the court found that requiring the disclosure of pseudonymous names presents First Amendment concerns. It says, although the review of public social media posts by a licensing officer poses no constitutional requiring applicants to disclose even pseudonyms under which they post online imposes an impermissible infringement on Second Amendment rights that is unsupported by analogs in the historical record and moreover presents serious First Amendment concerns. So, statement from Sam Paredes on behalf of the Board of Directors of the Gun Owners Foundation, he says, it's encouraging that the court of social media provisions, but just as intrusive are the processes needed to confirm someone is, quote, of good moral character, which the court has inexplicably chosen to uphold. Said frustratingly, much of this court's opinion reads like an insubordinate rebuke of the Supreme Court, which is a disgrace and cannot be allowed to stand. We are weighing action at the nation's high court. Panel wrote, the CCIA's definition of character is a proxy for dangerousness, whether the applicant, if licensed to carry a firearm, is likely to pose a danger to himself, others, or public safety. The court did note that, quote, good moral character is, quote, a spongy concept susceptible to abuse. It says, a licensing decision that uses good moral character as a smokescreen to deny licenses for impermissible reasons untethered to dangerousness, such as the applicant's lifestyle or political preferences, would violate the Constitution by relying on a ground for disarmament for which there is no historical basis. So you win some, you lose some. Some items in the Hunter Biden tax indictment. This is from American Briefing. So this talks about some of Hunter Biden's money instead of paying taxes. Strip clubs, girlfriends, porn. He's been charged with 9 felony counts of tax evasion, tax fraud, and failure to file taxes in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California, relating to over $1.4 million of tax that he allegedly owed to the federal government but didn't pay. Instead of paying taxes, he allegedly used the money, exceeding $4.9 million over 4 years, for various personal expenditures. Apart from cash withdrawals, the biggest expenditure he made was payments / various women totaling $683,000 between 2016 and 2019. Jeez. It says that the alleged payments dramatically increased his divorce from Catherine Buell. Adult entertainment accounted for $188,000 of it. He also spent $309,000 on tuition / education / extracurriculars. Coinciding with the period, Hunter Biden was enrolled in law school at Columbia. The whistleblower testified that Hunter Biden sought to deduct a portion of her law school tuition from his tax burden. He also spent $397,000 on clothes and personal accessories, including high-end clothing stores such as Rag & Bone, and $237,000 on health, beauty, pharmacy. He paid the health care and health insurance expenses of 3 women with sexual relationships. Jeez. Used a business line of credit to pay $27,000 to an unspecified pornography website. Also indicates he spent money at strip clubs, one of which was Club M Street Management in D.C., included a $1,500 payment to one exotic dancer via Venmo, described his tax returns as artwork. He also spent $72,000 on rehabilitation for his drug and alcohol addictions. Yeah, he's going to be in some trouble, I think. Hawkeye Mike just sent a text, which I just saw. I had seen the news before. House just voted to move forward with the impeachment inquiry by Biden. Party line vote 221 to 212. Good news. I mean, look, he is not going to be impeached. I mean, he's going to be impeached. He's not going to be convicted in the Senate. Make no mistake. The idea of him being called out is very important. So, here's a story from the Epoch Times. This is just an example of how maniacal La Dopey Nostra has become. Dopey Joe, I mean, I'm sure it's not him, The administration wants to seize patents of pricey drugs and use government to make them cheaper. The administration has posed a new rule that would let the government seize the patents of expensive drugs developed with federal funding. And let third parties use those patents to make the drugs available more cheaply. Now, I don't pretend to know what's in a government grant contract or what's in a, you know, where 10 fair dollars. I can tell you this, having worked on the board of a nonprofit foundation, employed but served on the board of a nonprofit, I can tell you that you don't do, that's not even, you can't read. You can't even measure how intrusive and how much, how far the overreach extends there. The National Institutes of Standards and Technology, part of the Department of Commerce, published a set of draft guidelines for government agencies to evaluate when it might be appropriate to invoke what are known as the march in rights under the legal framework of the Bayh-Dole Act. I assume that's Birch Bayh, but it could be Evan Bayh and Bob Dole. Now, this calls it the Bayh-Dole Act, which is Japan's University and Small Business Patent Procedure Act of 1980, grants the government the authority to suspend the patents of products of inventions that were developed with federal funding if those products or inventions are not made available to the public. Okay, so that's an act that was voted on by Congress. So let's think about this. If it's something Congress passed, who has the authority to change it? We'll make this multiple choice. A, Congress. B, the President. C, agencies within the executive branch. Or D, Barack Obama. Yeah, Congress. Congress is who has the authority to do that because they were the ones that passed it. Now, assuming the Supreme Court has not weighed in and said it was unconstitutional in the first place. Now, here's what White House advisor Lyle Brainard said. He said, we'll make it clear that when drug companies won't sell taxpayer-funded drugs at reasonable prices, we will be prepared to allow other companies to provide those drugs for less. Now, here's the dirty little secret that these people aren't telling you. Without funding, many of those drugs wouldn't have come along at all. The research costs, the costs of testing, the costs of development are so far out of reach. I mean, drug companies don't recoup money for a long time on some of these drugs. People say, oh, how can they sell these drugs for $10,000? You know why? Real simple, if you know anything about it. Because it's a crap load of money to develop it. They have to recoup that cost. They have shareholders, many of them, that need to recoup that cost to see the company recoup that cost. This, I mean, it's a backdoor crony capitalism, really, because who do you think is going to get the opportunity? You think they're going to reach out to people that, companies that beat Ostra? Don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. There's a 60-day public comment period, but it's literally, I don't even want, I mean, like I said, it's absolute overreach. And it's government seizure, basically. Here's one of those a lot about a nothing burger. But okay, so the squad alarm puller didn't get away with it. It says, just look at what happened to this top Democrat. This is from Patriot Journal. So Jamal Bowman, they were trying to secure a deal and achieve a bipartisan victory, blah blah blah. Video footage showed him pulling the alarm despite there being any cause. Many Republicans accused him of trying to deliberately disrupt congressional proceedings. So the GOP-led House opted to advance a resolution to censor Jamal Bowman. A motion to table it from Democrats failed. He completed a misdemeanor plea deal on account of falsely pulling a firearm that resulted in a temporary evacuation. Sounds like, ooh, censor. It voted to censor Adam Schiff and Rashida Tlaib. Notice anything happening to them? No. They did expel George Santos. Now, I know a lot of people are saying, ah, the Republicans. George Santos sounds like a real scumbag. The Republicans should have pulled him aside and just said, you know, resign now. The problem the Republicans see is that, oh, no, who's going to take that seat? And this brings me to another thing. This is a quick side. When you see people resign, like Jesse Ventura, this example, governor of Minnesota. And look, I don't have a lot of respect for the guy, but when Senator Norm Coleman died in a plane crash in, I think it was 2002 or 2004, Jesse Ventura, people pushed, you know, name this person, name that person. Jesse Ventura said, look, people of Minnesota elected a Democrat, so I'm going to appoint a Democrat. Now, he was allegedly independent, said he was a fiscal conservative. He wasn't. He was a fake independent. But he said, and it's, I don't have a fault with that. He said, I'm going to name a Democrat because that's who the people of Minnesota elected. So when Republicans, now look, I realize Democrat governors don't play that way. And Republican governors by and large probably don't either. But that's why, you know, they expel, I think, show that they're tough, when in fact, should have asked them to just step aside. And of course, they did it the same way that when they got rid of McCarthy. They did it without having any solution to the problem. So, but yeah, nothing burger for Jamal Bowman. Nothing's going to happen to him. Here's another poly sports item, sort of. Appears Dopey Joe was telling folks at the White House Tribal Nations Summit that tough choice while he was at Archmere Academy High School. He claimed to be the state scoring title runner-up as a 6-foot, 158-pound flanker, but he had the tough dilemma of choosing football or lacrosse for his on-field stardom. Now, look, I can't see him playing football. I don't know if he did or not. I don't care. I'm not going to look it up. But here's the problem. Archmere Academy didn't have a lacrosse team until 1993. Yeah, that's a mere 31 years after Dopey Joe graduated from the school. God. More uplifting stories about Dopey Joe. The source in the White House, Alex Jones, commentator Alex Jones, made these claims on a Tucker Carlson interview, but Thorpe was in the White House that Dopey Joe was walking around naked and on drugs. He stated that he wanders around for the entire 2.5 years. It's getting worse. He's naked in the White House in the middle of the night, doesn't know who he is. Tucker Carlson agreed. He goes, he is on drugs. I have established that. I know someone who witnessed it. I'm not guessing at this. I know someone personally who witnessed him taking amphetamines. Now, Alex Jones, if you remember, was permanently banned from X, formerly known as Twitter, a few years ago for violating their policies on hate speech and harassment. Elon Musk said he's considering bringing him back, by the way, but yeah, I mean, they say that it's typical to put dementia, not typical, it's typical self-medication for dementia patients, family or whatever, to put them on amphetamines, thinking it's going to give them a boost. Dopey Joe needs a lot more than a boost, folks. More proof that California is not part of any sane, normal country, we get this from American Liberty News. New government mandate requires gender-neutral protection in retail stores. Not kidding. Government of California, despite increasing crime, high taxes, poor business climate, cost of living, state legislature has decided that starting January 1st, 2024, retailers will be required to create gender-neutral toy displays. Businesses that refuse will face a hefty fine. California-based department stores with 500 or more employees that sell, quote, childcare items or toys, unquote, must have a gender-neutral section, quote, regardless of whether they have been traditionally marketed for either girls or for boys, unquote. Defines childcare items, anything designed to facilitate sleep, feed children with sucking or teething. It defines children as those 12 and under. Stores could face a $250 fine for the first violation and $500 for subsequent. I mean, are we really even – where does this come from? How do people come up with this stuff? It's Assemblyman Evan Lowe, 40-year-old lawmaker, that says, who's been favorably compared to Barack Obama. Favorably? Good God. Gender-neutral toys, toy store sections, and childcare sections. That's fucked up. That's way fucked up. Can people just not, look, I get it, when you're 28 years old, if you want to become a man or a woman or whatever, fine. But we're talking about raising kids. Raise them normal, please. Raise them according to their, to this.
Perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg. Why are you always on about women, Stan? I want to be one. What? I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry. What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies? It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
There you go. Right at the end. Symbolic of his struggle against reality. Look, are there people that born? I don't know. I mean, I don't even want to know, in a sense. I mean, yeah, of course you can buy it. On a planet with 7 billion people or whatever, yeah, there are probably some that identify or whatever. I mean, I've definitely talked to gay friends that say, I knew all along I didn't like girls. And I've gay female friends who have said, yeah, I knew all along I didn't like men. I mean, that I wasn't attracted to men. It happens. People say, how could you believe in a God that would let that happen? Who said God let it happen? I mean, people putting shit in their bodies over the years and whatnot, you never know. But anyway, gender neutral child care and toy sections is way fucked up. Look, I have a nephew that when he was about 4 or 5 years old, they saw the movie Annie and he loved it. So he wanted an Annie doll for Christmas. And I remember my brother-in-law at the time, he feigned disgust. And we kind of laughed at him when he got it, when he was a little kid. He got it and he was just jumping around happy. And we sort of laughed about it, but it was cute. It actually was very cute. But look, he didn't become a moron. He didn't become a female. Not saying if a kid wants to, if a four-year-old girl wants to chop wood and a four-year-old boy wants to bake cookies or whatever, of course, don't knock that down. Let them do it. I mean, what the hell? That's not what I'm talking about, though. I'm talking about people just want to go in and find something easy. They want to go in and find the women's, the boys section or the girls section or whatever. What the hell? Why do we have to have gender? I mean, what is this planet coming to? Seriously. From the Epic Times, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been denied at the Supreme Court. So basically, they had a request they rejected. So he was requesting that they intervene in a major being considered by the U.S. Supreme Court turned down. One of the justices offered a dissent. The majority of justices declined a motion to intervene from him. He's running for president as an independent after beginning his campaign as a Democrat. Supreme Court in October agreed to hear the case, Missouri versus Biden, which was brought by several state attorneys general and involves the pressure the U.S. government applied to social media companies during and before the COVID-19 pandemic. So the government officials repeatedly encouraged the companies to censor individual users, according to emails and other materials produced during discovery. A U.S. district judge and a federal appeals court said the evidence shows that government agencies worked to suppress speech. Couldn't have figured that out. Government appealed the case to the Supreme Court. Mr. Kennedy brought a similar case, which was consolidated at the district court level with the Missouri lawsuit. However, when the courts issued a preliminary injunction in the Missouri case, they declined to rule on a motion for an injunction from RFK Jr. His lawyer said that without the Supreme Court taking action, the plaintiffs are stranded. Plaintiffs remain stranded in the district court, even though their rights will be as adjudicated by this court as those of the Missouri versus Biden plaintiffs themselves. Intervention is warranted for that reason alone. Now, they said the argument was strengthened by the fact that he's a presidential candidate who has been targeted by the government and to this day sees speeches and interviews blocked online, according to his lawyers. Both justices did not agree and rejected the motion. They did not explain the reasoning. However, Mr. Kennedy, chairman on the eve of Children's Health Defense, which is a medical awareness nonprofit, he's being represented by the nonprofit. Mary Holland, who is the attorney on record, didn't respond to a request, nor did Mr. Kennedy's campaign. Justice Samuel Alito, the lone dissent, said that intervention in cases before the Supreme Court is unusual, but that he would grant Mr. Kennedy's motion. Now, the lower courts have said he's an alleged victim of a coordinated campaign between the government and big tech firms to censor. And Mr. Kennedy is also a presidential candidate, according to the justice. Because Mr. Kennedy's arguments on the merits are essentially the same as respondents, allowing intervention would not significantly affect petitioner's burden with regard to that issue. But the denial of intervention is likely to prevent Mr. Kennedy from vindicating the right claims until the spring of 2024, and perhaps as late as June of 2024. Several months of the presidential campaign will have passed. Justice Alito noted that government officials have argued that plaintiffs don't have standing, but he says Mr. Kennedy has a strong claim to standing, and the government actually hasn't claimed otherwise. He says because the motion was rejected, the court sides with the government, the decision will provide little guidance for deciding Mr. Kennedy's case. Mr. Kennedy will be required to wait until the district court separately assesses his claims. Yeah, it's interesting in that, look, this guy, I don't want to say fringe candidate, he's a Kennedy. So he's going to get notice. He's going to get some support. Maybe not from anybody sane. Look, I hearken back to this. Please, if you're on social media, please stop pretending RFK is not a typical Kennedy. Please stop saying he'd be a good running mate for President Trump. Please stop doing the memes of President Trump looking at a picture of JFK, his uncle, RFK's uncle, and saying, I'll finish what you started. Because nothing could be further from the truth. John F. Kennedy, like the rest of them, they were Kennedys. RFK Jr. is a Kennedy. Ted Kennedy, who may have been the best at the fake "we serve the people," literally, that dude ran a line of bullshit that wouldn't. I mean, he had even convinced himself the idea that they served the people and that they were for the common man is absolute horseshit. It's absolute garbage. They never were. They never have been. They are a family that is self-serving. Now, look, most politicians are. But in terms of a family dynasty, Jesus F. Christ, these people could write the book on how to be self-serving. In fact, they did write the book, and Barack Obama read it cover to cover multiple times and learned from it, because Barack Obama is probably the only person in my lifetime that has taken self-serving to a level beyond the Kennedys, to a level that would make the average Kennedy envious. They should not be getting censored, should not be being suppressed by social media, especially when it's collusion between government and big tech. You have to ask yourself this. Do you really think, I mean, we always say we don't want running our country, making decisions for us. And yet, there are people that say, oh, it's okay that social media suppressed this because it was bad. No. Where are the free speech defenders on that, on the left? There aren't any. Because they don't believe, suppression is perfectly fine to them. If it's anything conservative or right-wing or Republican or whatever. We got a little more maniacal behavior, but not from California this time. For alleged threat to kill Republican presidential candidate. A New Hampshire man was arrested over the weekend after allegedly making threats against businessman and Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy. His senior advisor, Trish McLaughlin, confirmed who allegedly sent threatening messages is Tyler Anderson. According to documents, Anderson is charged with transmitting in interstate commerce a threat to injure another person after he allegedly texted Ramaswamy's campaign that he was going to kill the candidate and attendees at a campaign event after receiving a text message from Ramaswamy's campaign inviting him to a breakfast. Here's what he said. Great. Another opportunity for me to blow the candidate's brains, Anderson allegedly responded. Followed by another message reading, I'm going to kill everyone who attends and then F their corpses. Thanks, I'll see you there. Hope you have the stamina for a mass shooting, another alleged text said. I'd call that a maniac. I'd call that a serious maniac. I mean, do people not understand? Social media is forever. Text is forever. Email is forever. The internet is forever. Look, you can bleach bit and you can wash this and wash, but anyone with half a brain in the forensics computing field can find that stuff. Talking to you, Hunter. Literally, anyone can find it. Takes nothing for them to go back and find it. Seriously. I read this stuff, and I got to go Kinnison on you. Here we go.
So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnam invasion to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. I know a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in the classroom. Hoping I was right, thinking about it, I was up on my knees in rice paddies with guns and Edward going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him while pussies like you were back here partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle album.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Oh, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper. But since you want to help, maybe you can help me, okay? You remember that thing we had about 30 years ago called that Korean conflict? Yeah, where we failed to achieve victory. How come we didn't cross the 38th parallel and push those rice eaters back to the Great Wall of China and take the first brick and nuke them back into the fucking Stone Age River? How come? Tell me why! Say it! Say it!
All right, I'll say it. Because Truman was too much of a pussy wimp to let MacArthur go in there and blow out those commie bastards.
Good answer. Good answer. I like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
Well, good teacher. He really seems to care. About what, I have no idea.
And so you read this story about this guy threatening Ramaswamy, and you're wondering, is he Kinnison, or seriously, or is it just the Kinnison level of frustration? Because it's like, God, I don't get it. What, I mean, are we really? I mean, are we a country of maniacs, or is it just that where there are people out there who just haven't caught on, or whatever? I mean, what the hell? What in the actual hell? A text inviting you to a breakfast and you go scorched earth with, I'm going to kill everyone. Another chance to kill this mother. I mean, what the I mean, I laugh that I may not cry. But, I mean, seriously, who the hell responds like that? I mean, have you ever heard that there's a feature on your phone where you can just hit delete the text messages? You can even type in the word stop, send it back. This little algorithm in their SMS servers, short message service it's called, it actually picks up and it says, okay, don't send this guy any more stuff. Believe it or not, technology has advanced far. Now, I know some of us, me included, are still sometimes in the days of, did you know you can record on one channel while watching another? I get that. But I'm picking it up. But yeah, short message service, which is SMS, text messaging on a phone. You can actually type the word stop to a mass message, a commercial message, and it goes back to the server and says stop, and it knows. That's all the guy had to do. So Hunter Biden, who, by the way, refused a House subpoena today and went sort of off the rails on the steps of the Capitol, the guy prosecuted, the special counsel in his case is now he's getting more serious. After months of facing accusations by the GOP of favoritism, Special Counsel David Weiss is claiming that a motion filed by Hunter to attempt to subpoena President Trump has no merit. They wrote a letter to U.S. District Court Judge Mary Ellen Noreika, assert that Hunter Biden makes no case for protected class nor cites evidence of vindictive that could be attributed to the former president. The United States respectfully opposes defendant's request to issue subpoena ducis tecum. His motion is meritless and should be denied. The letter also references subpoena requests for Trump, former U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, and two other former Justice Department officials. It is worth noting from the outset that defendant misunderstands the difference between pretrial to dismiss an indictment and trial defenses. It is black letter law that claims of vindictive and selective prosecution are not trial defenses and may only be brought and litigated pretrial. They are not defenses and therefore are never argued to trial juries. In seeking discovery for a claim of selective prosecution, the defendant fails to identify even one similarly situated individual who was not prosecuted for similar conduct. This omission alone precludes his request for discovery. also identifies no constitutionally protected class to which he belongs and does not identify any evidence of discriminatory intent by the relevant decision makers, which is what the law requires in order to make out a claim of selective prosecution. Defendant's motion similarly fails to articulate any basis for a vindictive prosecution claim. Defendant fails to identify what protected constitutional or statutory right he is being punished for asserting. Last month, his Hunter's attorneys alleged a plot by the GOP to bias the Justice Department. They make note that no charges were filed against Hunter while President Trump oversaw the Department of Justice. The ban comes as part of a case charging Hunter with lying on documents denying he was a drug user when he purchased a firearm in 2018. He is facing two separate misdemeanor charges related to tax fraud. Of course, plea deal apart in July. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Weiss as special counsel. Garland has denied influencing the case, though mainstream media reports uncover that the DOJ was prepared to drop its entire case against Hunter until whistleblowers came forward. FBI agents previously tipped off the raid of his home before it occurred, and agents lied to Weiss about the Bureau's involvement. You know, I hate to segue into the FBI, and I'm not going to do full segue, but if we literally have people in our FBI that are doing that are tipping off people like Hunter Biden, now look, I get it. You know, again, this is where I talked about last week. Joe Biden being from Scranton, Pennsylvania, the Scranton mob is called the Pittstown family. Joe Barbara, who hosted the Appalachian meetings in 1956 and 1957, called national mafia conventions. That's not what they were. It wasn't the commission. They weren't commission meetings. It was all kind. It was people from all over. And they basically met to sort of ratify the next group of the commission and just talk about general stuff. People mistake the mob and the commission for like the commission rules on everything. No. In a case like this, in the Appalachian meeting, basically the national mob was just the 1956 and 57 meetings were ratifying the commission, ratifying how they would handle drug issues, whether they would provide defense or whether they would cut guys loose who got busted dealing drugs or for drug crimes. Now, though it took place in New York, it was hosted by Joe Barbara, who lived in Appalachian, New York. Joe Barbara was the boss of the Scranton family, the Pittstown family, the Northeast Pennsylvania family, which included Scranton. So to say that, oh, he's not mob influence was big there. And that's where Joe Biden's from. So when you hear that, well, they couldn't make the FBI. Yeah, they could. The mob would buy off the FBI in a heartbeat. Now, certainly, it's not your father's mob. It's not the days of Charlie Luciano, certainly. It's not the days of Luciano. It's not the days of John Gotti or Vincent the Chin Gigante. But it's still the mob. So the idea that Joe Biden was propped up by the mob, owned by the mob, and you know that they had their hooks into the FBI is not far-fetched. People say, the mob's dead, or this is dead. No, it's not. Oh, the mob as you know it is dead. The mob of Paul Castellano getting blown away in front of Spark Steakhouse, yeah, that's, you know, that sensational type stuff. They've gone to ground, and they do it, and then they come back. I mean, John Gotti Jr. has come back. Joey Merlino in Philadelphia has come back. He may not live in Philly anymore, but he's still running the Philly mob. But no, it's not the same as it was. It's not. But yeah, it's, you know, I mean, what are we going to say, that these guys have all gone legit? No, of course not. So when I hear that, Scranton, Pennsylvania, and then hear about, you know, and remember where Joe Barbara was from and what the mob family that he ran. And that was Russell Bufalino later. If you saw The Irishman, Russell Bufalino, played by Joe Pesci, was the one who took over for that family after Joe Barbara died, or Joe Barbara, however you pronounced it. And they say we're probably heavily involved in the killing of Jimmy Hoffa. So yeah, to hear that the FBI tipped him off, I mean, you're wondering, God, is the FBI, when did the FBI get so bad? It probably has always had a bad element. It's just gotten worse. It's just been more infiltrated. It's just been more, you know. From The First, which is the streaming networks, I guess cable networks too, Joe Biden, Senile Joe, says the Hamas attack happened 65 years ago. And he walks up and says, Kuyaga, because it's the 65 years since the deadliest day of Jewish people since the Holocaust. 65 years. He claims that Ronald Reagan sent Air Force Helicopter One to take him to the hospital when he had a brain aneurysm in the 1980s, although it's not supported by either his own autobiography or by Reagan's daily presidential diary. Then he tells the story to Philadelphia firefighters of almost losing his house in a fire, although the 2004 AP report said it was a small fire contained in the kitchen and was under control in 20 minutes. He moved to a designated spot where he was supposed to speak. He saluted somebody who wasn't there. He literally just saluted air. Okay, so he walks up. He's walking up. He does a salute to nobody there. And then he says, Kuyaga. Kuyaga. What the hell? Yeah, this guy's nuts. We knew that, but it's just not, he's not getting any better. Let's put it that way. More bad news for Dopey Joe, by the way. So, 8 critical swing states, key group of Dopey Joe voters there, could have him losing those states. There's a group mounting a campaign to abandon him. Muslim leaders in 8 swing states, a campaign to, quote, hashtag abandon Biden in the 2024 election due to his handling of the war between Israel and Hamas. According to Politico, leaders from Washington, from Michigan, Minnesota, Arizona, Wisconsin, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, and Pennsylvania met in Dearborn, Michigan to coordinate their efforts before the election. Group boasted that they not only have the money, but also the actual votes. Their goal is by winning their states. Their reason, of course, is his support of Israel in the current conflict with Hamas. Although he came out today or yesterday and said Netanyahu needs to change course. And progressive, of course, have joined the anti-Israel Muslims. The problem is, pulling support for Israel, he loses Jewish vote. And he would lose a lot of moderate Democrats, including the newly moderate John Fetterman, who has become very, I mean, there's a funny meme about that. It's just a picture of him sitting there, and it's I think it's Babylon Bee, of course, but it says, as man comes closer to reality, he becomes more conservative. I mean, it's basically saying he's gotten his faculties back and he's starting to think. But yeah, that's not good news for Dopey Joe. And lastly, before I get onto the sports area, some more good news, possible good news from the Supreme Court. They have accepted a case challenging the January 6th obstruction charges. The case of a January 6th defendant's appeal of the Department of Justice's novel use evidence tampering law to prosecute hundreds of defendants for obstruction of Congress. A miscellaneous order released by the High Court today granted the petition of Joseph Wayne Fisher, challenging the most widely charged felony in January 6 cases, which carries up to 20 years in prison. It's one of three identical petitions for case review by J6 defendants who were charged with corruptly obstructing an official proceeding, namely a special joint session of Congress convened for the counting and certification of Electoral College votes on January 6, 2021. DOJ had charged nearly 330 defendants and former President Trump with obstruction as of December 6th of this year. President Trump was charged in August with several counts related to obstruction of the joint session of Congress on January 6th. A grand jury indicted him for obstruction of an official proceeding, among other counts. Defendant Thomas Caldwell, who was tried in the same case as Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes and three other Oath Keepers, asked U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta to suspend his sentencing hearing until the Supreme Court resolves the obstruction case. The government is requesting a 14-year sentence for Caldwell based almost entirely upon his finding of guilt as to count four, obstruction, defense attorney David Fisher wrote. Additionally, Caldwell's potentially high sentencing guidelines are driven almost entirely by count four. Defense attorney William Shipley predicted that the SCOTUS's decision to take up the obstruction case would put an end to the D.C. prosecution of President Trump. The decision by SCOTUS today to take up the appeal on the 1512 obstruction of an official proceeding case means the Trump D.C. case will not be going to trial, Mr. Shipley wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter. This is the easy way that happened without directly acting on the Trump case on an expedited basis. It says if the case turns in favor of the defendants, this will be life-altering for hundreds of people who were unjustly persecuted for a felony instead of the misdemeanor that was crafted by Congress for the trespass behavior at issue. Fritz Ulrich, a public defender, federal public defender who represents Mr. Fisher, filed the Supreme Court petition, told the Epoch Times, "We're very happy that the court has decided to clarify the scope of Section 1512. Amicus brief filed by former Feds Group Freedom Foundation said the co-opted evidence tampering law means whatever a creative prosecutor lacking caution wishes it to mean. To be charged is to be convicted because the criminal charge has no fixed meaning. Wow. Yeah. This is one person wrote, the Supreme Court taking up the obstruction of an official proceeding appeal is a clear message to the DOJ that government extremism has gone too far, that more than 300 Americans, including President Trump, myself, and many in prison were wrongfully charged, wrote William Pope of Topeka, Kansas. Says, sadly, the DOJ has, for the last 3 years, used the obstruction charge, which the Supreme Court is now primed to throw out, to pressure J6 defendants into plea deals. The outcomes of many cases would be far different if not for this DOJ malpractice. Rachel Powell, a J6 defendant sentenced to 15 in prison for obstruction and other counts, said she cried at the announcement. I read this and couldn't stop the tears from flooding. This could be life-changing for my family. Yeah, it's... So that could be good. That could be really good. Going to take a break, and I'll come back with college football. And got a lot to say, but nothing mean. Be back in about 3.5 minutes. are back. That was the Sal Soul Orchestra with Merry Christmas All from their Christmas album. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, found several days a week on blogtalkradio.com. Our call-in number, for those that have anything to say or just want to listen, 319-527-6706. You can also come into the chat room. Good way is to get yourself a free account, log in as Duck Northwest Media has done. Or, as I said, you can call in, as my buddy Jeff did a second ago from Kiwanis. He must have heard the song and said, what the heck's going on? And Hawkeye Mike is listening in, as is my big sister. And that's how you can partake in the show. So let's talk some much football. Heisman Trophy was given out last Saturday. To the shock of not many, LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels won it, and with some pretty serious numbers. Now, some of them are not big. 3,812 yards passing with 40 TDs, just four interceptions. He also gained 1,134 yards on the ground, averaged 8.4 yards per carry, and 10 rushing touchdowns. He became the fifth SEC player to account for 50 touchdowns in a season. The other four also won the Heisman. He had a 606-yard day against Florida, 372 passing yards, 234 rushing yards. Interestingly, one team held him to one touchdown, Florida State. His career stats, although great, also came over five seasons due to players getting the extra year because of COVID. But here is another interesting stat from him. His longest pass from scrimmage was 86 yards. His longest run from scrimmage, 85 yards. So, yeah, he's a great player. Washington quarterback Michael Penix finished second. I kind of thought that would go to Bo Nix of Oregon, who finished third. Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. finished fourth. With all the players who have entered the transfer portal, a lot of bowl games will once again be missing players. Some of the high-profile guys that won't play, Notre Dame quarterback Sam Hartman, although he's preparing for the draft. North Carolina quarterback Drake May, also preparing for the draft. OSU quarterback Kyle McCord, Ohio State quarterback Kyle McCord, has entered the transfer portal, as has Oklahoma quarterback Dylan Gabriel. Quarterback Riley Leonard, Coastal Carolina quarterback Grayson McCall, Oregon State quarterback DJ Uiagalelei. That's just the quarterbacks. The whole list of players that we'll miss would take up a whole two-hour program. And then like I said, you have the guys that declared for the draft and are thus opting out. That list nowadays, it used to be wow, but now it's nothing close to the transfer portal. The whole thing pretty much affects all the bowls. Pretty much save the championship, the college football playoff bowl. So those two games, four teams. I'm not even sure those are immune at this point. Then you got this oddity, James Madison, who only got into the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl on an exemption, had their head coach take the Indiana job after Indiana fired Tom Allen. And quarterback Jordan McLeod entered the transfer. But he said he is going to stay on to play in the bowl game. Now, if I'm one of his teammates, I'm pretty much saying this. His presence here isn't a team thing. He's auditioning for his next place, assuming he's not going to Indiana, or maybe he will. Who knows? Look, I'm not really sure what it's going to take, bowl games. There's one person on the Iowa Rivals Forum. Even if NIL deals include a clause insisting players must appear in bowl games, that's just going to lead to a rash of players claiming injury. They're going to get doctor's notes to excuse them. Now, I don't think it's a matter of bowls are meaningless. I do think it's a reaction to that player from Notre Dame a few years ago who got hurt, and Jake Butt from Michigan who got hurt in bowl games. And that, you know, Jake Butt, I guess, never really was effective after that. The other guy, his stock dropped and all that. But yeah, it's a problem. But I think I can come up with a solution. In fact, I have an idea, which in my humble opinion is a brilliant one. Try this one on for size. For both the 12-team playoff, which starts next year, as well as any surviving bowl games, have a clause. X number of players or X percentage of players announce their intent not to play. The team has its college football playoff or its bowl slot rescinded. Those players forfeit a percentage of NIL money no matter the reason. Now, I'm going to go into something in a second about there's a proposal that all colleges pay their athletes $30,000 a year. That's not NIL money. That's separate. And they're saying it's because of these media deals. But some of these schools don't have media deals like this. In fact, the two surviving Pac-12 members are finding their worth. If they haven't said it, it's going to go down precipitously next year. So Corey Breda is a Hawkeye-themed podcaster. It's called From the Hawkeye of the Storm. The other day he had Brad Heinrichs, who is the leader, I'm not sure of his exact title, of the Swarm, which is the NIL collective for the Iowa Hawkeyes. They pointed out several what I would say are disturbing facts. One is that schools are contacting players even before they declare portal. In season, they're contacting players throughout. And this isn't even back-channel stuff. It's not like, having a third part. It's coming directly from coaches. Some of them are getting direct contact from other coaches. They're offering NIL deals directly, and in some cases, players are using it as leverage against their current schools. Now, this is in direct conflict with how both the portal and name, image, and likeness are supposed to operate. We're not supposed to contact a player who hasn't entered the transfer portal. You're not supposed to contact players from other schools, period. As a consequence, coaches and staff, as they pointed out, are having to recruit their own players to try and make sure they remain at their current schools. This totally sucks, of course. It totally sucks. It's why the NCAA and the conferences have to get to work on this post-haste. Look, it's ludicrous. Schools and coaches and others are blatantly breaking any established rules, such as they are. Established rules themselves, aren't they? But look, until tighter, better defined rules are in place, and until they are enforced with real penalties, this is going to continue. So, for those that are still pissed at Florida State snub, I have read several suggestions. They range from boycotting watching the games, boycotting merchandise, boycotting the third and fourth ranked teams, ask sports bars not to show the games. Yeah, good luck with that. Still, I can say right now with firm conviction, I will not watch either game. I will not watch either game. And the hell of it is, much as I hate Michigan, I hate Bama more. So I kind of don't want Bama to win because, they got in when they shouldn't have. But I hate Michigan just as much. I mean, I hate Bama just slightly more. But I hate Michigan. I used to not, but I hate them now. Their fans are arrogant. Their coach is arrogant. You know, they talk about all these things, but look, they're letting Michigan into the playoff with two potential suspensions of Jim Harbaugh. He's been suspended twice this season by his school. They have no problem letting them in. Where was the Big Ten on this? I mean, is the Big Ten okay with Michigan stealing signs for the college football playoff? Look, I'm a Big Ten guy. But think about this. I've thought about it. Is the Big Ten okay with Michigan stealing signs for the playoff? Think about that. Look, in my heart, I am pulling for Washington to win it all, believe it or not. The various incarnations of All-America teams are out. And the Iowa Hawkeyes are well represented. Defensive back Cooper DeJean, punter Torrey Taylor, both made first team on pretty much all of them. Linebacker Jay Higgins was named second team on several and first team on a defensive back Sebastian Castro was named to third team on at least one and was first team on one. By the way, the Hawkeyes have now had 10 straight seasons with either a first or second team All-America selection. In addition to that, punter Torrey Taylor has won the Ray Guy Award as the best punter in the nation. The Hawkeyes had their football banquet last Sunday. Gene Higgins and running back LaShawn Williams were named as MVPs. No idea how punter Torrey Taylor was not included as well. Don't get that. Bowl games this coming week. Saturday, Georgia Southern takes on Ohio University in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. You're betting. Don't look to me for advice because I know who Georgia Southern is. I know who Ohio U is. But I have no idea which team is that good right now. Howard takes on Florida A&M in the Celebration Bowl. Takes on Louisiana in the New Orleans Bowl. Interesting. Miami of Ohio takes on Appalachian State in the Cure Bowl. Mexico State takes on Fresno State in the New Mexico Bowl. UCLA Boise State in the Los Angeles Bowl. Cal and Texas Tech in the Independence Bowl. And then Monday, Western Kentucky and Old Dominion in the famous Toastery Bowl. I don't want to know. Tuesday, UTSA, Texas San Antonio, takes on Marshall in the Frisco Bowl. Mike just sent me a text. He says, this is why I think Harbaugh may be gone after the playoffs. The NCAA is not done with Michigan or Harbaugh. I think Harbaugh pulls a Pete Carroll and jumps to the pros. I am sending him a thumbs up because I agree. But it's not just a Harbaugh thing, you know. It's a school. It's an institutional thing. You know, people have said over the years, Ohio State gets away with this, does that. I'll say that over the years, I've met a lot of Ohio State fans who are gracious, who have been complimentary of Iowa and complimentary of other Big Ten teams. Don't look at themselves as having a birthright. Michigan fans have had this birthright attitude probably forever. But as they've gotten better over the last few years, consequently with the cheating, they've just not kept their mouths shut. It's kind of interesting. Jim Harbaugh was in the hot seat and all this stuff with Connor Stallions, the assistant who basically set up the spy ring. He's fired, but then the coach who was his buddy was fired as well because he was trying to, you know, erase stuff. Now, to their credit, Michigan did fire this guy. But don't kid yourselves. If they could have gotten away with it, not fired him, they would have kept on going. Why it's so gratifying 2016 when they were undefeated and come into Iowa City 10-0, ranked third of the country. Ba-boom. No time left on the clock. I don't know, in all honesty, how you can look at the Harbaugh situation and say he didn't know. I don't know how you can look at it and say, oh, he didn't know. I don't know how Michigan fans could come on Iowa sports forums and say he didn't know. And then you got these guys that come in claiming to be insiders and then say, this guy's told me this, he's told me that. And then you find some more stuff and he goes, oh, he didn't tell me. How much of a damn insider are you? First of all, don't claim it. When you claim to be an insider, you just look stupid. So I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know how he could not have known. Now, the other one, lying to the NCAA investigator about COVID practices and stuff, that would have been a nothing burger itself. But coupled with this other thing, and then it's multiple offenses, and then it becomes lack of institutional control, and then it becomes show cause. I think Mike's right. I think if they win, it's a conundrum for him. How does he walk away? But we'll see. I mean, you look at their rival, big rival, Ohio State, who basically, I think, Ryan Day threw his quarterback, Kyle McCord, under the bus. They recruited other guys. It looks like some of these transfer portal quarterbacks are being contacted by Ohio State. So he's basically been told, you're not the guy next year necessarily. Supposedly he said he wanted a guarantee that he would be the man. Now look, if you're a football player, I don't care what position you play. I don't know how you walk away from a meeting with a coach with a straight face and with your head held high after you've uttered the line, I want to guarantee I'm the starter next year. I guess I don't understand the lack of team concept. You want your team to do well. You want your teammates to do well. And if one gets done better than you, so be it. Something my dad used to say in business, there is no telling how far a man can go. Now, my dad was older. He's probably meant to say woman too, but he said, there's no telling how far a man can go. And he admits that he didn't make this one up or anything, but somebody he'd heard it said. He said, there's no telling how far a man can go if he doesn't care who gets the credit. That's why, I know people think on Deacon Hill, Iowa's quarterback. And look, he wasn't a joy to watch by any means. But you know what? He's gone out there with his head held high. He's done his best. He wasn't he hasn't played since the 2019 season. In 2020, he was still in high school. His team didn't play because of COVID. In 2021, he was a freshman at Wisconsin, redshirted. And in 2022, he got like 3 snaps or something. And then in 2023, before the 2023 season, really during right after the 2022 season, his coach had been fired, Paul Chryst. That's probably who recruited him. They brought in his defensive coordinator was the interim, and then they didn't give him the job. They just, they blew him off. So I get it with him wanting to leave Wisconsin. I know there with offensive analyst or whatever, John Budmeyer, but in any offense, in any sense, I get it, he has not played a lot. But damn it, he was serviceable to a degree. He wasn't great. No, he wasn't even good. But man, can't say he didn't give it his all. Can't say he wasn't just busting his ass out there. People say, I can't believe we didn't have a better option. I can. Comes down to recruiting or whatever. People say, oh, Kirk says Deke gives us the best chance to win. How do you know he doesn't? He said, oh, I've watched. People are putting up these things of Joey Labus in practice. By the way, Joey Labus is in the portal. He's not playing in the bowl game. Stop. I mean, literally, when people are putting up stuff on Hawkeye forums or on Twitter saying, look at Joey Labus dropping dime. Joey Labus is no longer an Iowa Hawkeye. Effective. Now, last year, there were a couple grad transfer guys that entered the portal that Kirk Ferentz allowed to take part in the bowl or to travel to the bowl. They wanted playing time elsewhere. They weren't guaranteed playing time, but they'd stuck it out. So he granted them that, and that's his choice. When someone enters the transfer portal, here's the procedure. They enter the transfer portal. At that point, the school is no longer obligated than to keep them connected with the team. Now, if the coach wants to keep them connected with the team, they can. Caleb Shudak was one. Believe it or not, Davion Nixon was another. Last year, Dallas Kratis had entered the portal but wanted to play with his teammates in the Music City Bowl. He was granted that. He was a grad transfer. So it's not all, I mean, to quote Jack Walsh of The Godfather, it's not all dollars and cents. No. The loyalty, et cetera. And just because a guy enters the portal doesn't mean the coaches end up hating him. They understand as well as anyone else. But the school is allowed to sever the player from the program itself. Not Gould. They can't stop paying their tuition, blah, blah, blah. But they can, you can say you're no longer allowed in team activities. You're no longer part of the team. They have that right. Now, some players handle it with class. Now, Kirk Ferentz was shocked with a couple of years ago. Julius Brents entered the portal. But when Julius Brents went pro after last season, one of the things he said was he owes a lot to his, he's grateful to and owes a lot to the Iowa program for getting him to where he is, and he's now in the pros. So, yeah, some handle it with class, others don't.
Charlie Jones.
Tyrone Tracy handled it with class, dignity, never, you know, the time I met him and on Twitter, has never ranked on Iowa for his former teammates. So that's how the transfer portal works. We're going to have to deal with it until somebody comes along and does something about it, but that's how it is right now. Finally, you've got this Poly Sports item. This is a post from Dan Dockich on X, formerly known as Twitter. Now, Dan Dockich, for college basketball fans, is a former Indiana Hoosier, actually an assistant coach at one point, grad assistant, then an assistant. I believe he served as an interim head coach. Bit. So I typically regard him as a political liberal. I don't know that for sure, but I guess I just kind of think I don't know, but he's on OutKick, so maybe he is not. He is on OutKick.com, so that would probably make him a conservative, but I think OutKick is an equal opportunity employer. So anyway, you heard about LeBron James, Bronny or whatever, had that heart episode or that whatever last spring or summer. And he came back. He appeared in his first game for Southern California. Good for him. Prayers for him. God keep him safe. So LeBron and the posse showed up to the game, walked on while the anthem was playing. Cap up saying nothing. So Dan Dockich, in his he reposted something from In Wokeness that said LeBron completely ignores the national anthem and sits down. And Dan Dockich had this to say. This is what he said. A country that provided the opportunity for him to showcase his talent and make $1 billion. F this guy. Normally not a Dan Dockich fan, but on this instance, I am. So one guy answered it. Our country didn't provide him any opportunity. His hard work, long hours of practice, and dedication to the sport provided him the opportunity. I see lots of people there not honoring the flag. Trump carried out a coup attempt. Who's more American? Dan Dockich with the perfect answer. But Trump. The guy said, we still care about a song written when guys like him couldn't do or have rights for anything is always funny to me. It's always old white guys that have the opinion too. By the way, that's completely false. Others are saying, you're totally total hypocrisy. One answer to that was, you are so smart and intelligent. And it's a meme. It says, World War III is good. Biden is doing a great job. So, you know, Dan Dockich got called out for it. But he totally nailed it. But yeah, literally one answer. We still care about a song written when guys like him couldn't do or have rights for anything is always funny to me. I don't get that. Why is it funny? It means something. You know, people always assume that during the founding of our country that slavery was still a thing and that they wanted it to be a thing. We had stopped importing slaves in 1750. Or maybe 1788. No, I'm pretty sure 1750. Now, yes, we had, you know, legacy slaves, if you want to call it that. But we had stopped the importation of slaves in 1750. England had stopped the importation of slaves as well. But they were still shipping them here. I know. Messed up. But, yeah, I mean, Dan Dockich is right. Now, for people who sit there and say, these are the same people that want a pride flag. They don't want to have to pay attention to the anthem. I mean, there's a thing called decorum. There's a thing called tradition. There's a thing called respect. Look, I'm not asking for LeBron to genuflect. I'm not even asking for him to take his hat off. But good God, walking in during the anthem and totally ignoring it. Now, look, you've heard me talk before. I'm not necessarily a fan of the anthem being played before games. I'm not in favor of halftime shows. I really don't want to see an aging Madonna perform at halftime of the Super Bowl or any other friggin' game. Not just people kneeling. It's not just guys like LeBron. It's people that are talking during the anthem. It's people that are taking that last chug of beer. People that still have their hats on. Jack wagons in Green Bay who have their shirts off in December with a Packer logo printed on their chest or whatever. There's all kinds of ways to disrespect the anthem. But for somebody to say LeBron wasn't provided the opportunity in this company or in the country and that he worked hard and all that stuff, bullshit. LeBron was given opportunities that other kids wouldn't have gotten. Look, other players had the same thing. Isaiah Thomas, if you watch Hoop Dreams, there were guys in that movie. St. Joseph's Catholic School outside of Chicago, where Isaiah Thomas happened to go. Gene Pinkator, longtime coach, gave scholarships to inner city kids. If they weren't panning out, they suddenly were notified that they were short on their tuition, that kind of stuff. LeBron wouldn't have gotten that opportunity in a lot of places. Now, he would have gotten it in old communist countries who would have exploited him. By the way, communist countries are exploiting his ass now. China. But yeah, Dan Dockich, who I've never really been a fan of on LeBron. Look, LeBron's a jackass. LeBron thinks he's really smart, thinks that because he's done all this stuff that he's somehow learned and educated and smart. He's not. Remember, the whole China thing. Daryl Morey, 2 master's degrees. Pointing out the people of Hong Kong needed our support. LeBron saying, that's just total bullshit. And then when it was brought up as well, I think, what did he say? He actually said, people that don't know what they're talking about need to not speak up. Daryl Morey knew a lot more about it than LeBron, but LeBron was in China's pocket. LeBron was making all kinds of money from China. No, LeBron's not a smart guy. Now, look, he's done good stuff. He's spent, given a lot of money away, done things with his money. I mean, you don't have to agree with everything that he's done, but he's done it. I don't rank on that. But when he starts doing the, I'm a little too smart for this. Now, let's cut him some slack on this other end. He's getting there before his kid's playing. He was probably in the locker room with his kid before that. Your kid collapses on the court, and he's making his first appearance back in an actual game situation. Those of us old enough to remember Hank Gathers on the court and his death, That's got to be going through LeBron's mind. So give him a little slack in that side of it. I literally give him a little slack. I get that. He's worried. He should be. You don't know what's happening with your kid. And before people say, well, if he hadn't had his kid vaxxed, you know what? His kid probably didn't have a choice if he wanted to play basketball at Southern California. They ain't known for being maverick and going against the grain when it comes to the liberal mindset. So, yeah, Bronny probably had to get vaxxed if he wanted to play at Southern California. Now, maybe his family went all along with that, and a lot of people. Look, I personally believe that there's a problem with the vaccine and all that stuff, but the point being, there are other people that didn't believe that, and LeBron might not have believed that. And maybe he said to his kid, you know, if you're going to play there, you got to get vaxxed. And that maybe that's what happened. I don't know. Maybe he's just got a heart anomaly, has a problem. My son-in-law has an anomaly of that kind, so I get it. But I'm really, in a sense, proud of Dan Dockich for speaking up and just saying, a country that provided him the opportunity to showcase his talent and make $1 billion. Because on that score, he is not wrong. Show a little respect, LeBron. It's not all about you. It's not all about your kid. Sometimes it's about tradition and decorum. And yes, respect. Okay, that's it for me tonight, folks. I have said my piece or pieces. Annie, Southern Sense Radio, joined us. Welcome, Annie. Annie's got her show Fridays, Blog Talk Radio, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. with her co-host, Curtis Bennett, I believe his name is. Both, I believe, published authors, I'm pretty sure. Both are published authors. Great show. Unfortunately, Fridays are not a time that I get to listen much live, so I will go in and listen Memorex, as they say. Thank you for joining in, Annie. I want to thank Duck for being here as well, and Hawkeye Mike and my big sister. It's been grand, as they say. I will be back next week, Wednesday. Don't forget this Saturday night, Minister Usama Dakduk in the beautiful Christie, 10 p.m. to midnight, revealing the truth about Islam. And then Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al, Mama Mia No Sharia. In the meantime, folks, it's the Christmas season. Be safe in the parking lots. Scumbags out there like to steal people's purses and shopping bags, etc. So be safe out there shopping. Have a blessed holiday season, of course. Be safe this weekend. It's the first weekend of bowl games. So people are getting crazy about that. They've, you know, season's changing. So you got tourists going from one end of the country to the other. And just there's a lot of craziness out there anyway. So be safe. Have a great weekend. Have a great rest of the week. God bless America and God bless all of you. In the meantime, send you out with a classic holiday football type tune. Those of you that watched enough football back in the day or watched this week in baseball will recognize it, of course. Have a good one, folks. We'll be right back. Good night, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.